Hello and welcome to the Niche Podcast for Friday, July 4th, 2014. Happy New Year. I'm Jonathan Stark.
I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we're here to talk about building apps that run everywhere using open web standards like HTML, CSS, JavaScript, REST, and JSON. This week, we list the top 10 reasons why you should wrap your web app in PhoneGap for iOS, Android, and Windows Phone. Please stay tuned. The Niche Podcast is next.
Happy New Year.
I couldn't remember what holiday it was. Oh, yeah, 4th of
July. Nice. Yeah. Well, you just said July 4th. You couldn't remember what holiday it was.
But the holiday is called 4th of July, so it kind of threw me.
But it's the same thing.
I know, but it's like a different, phonetically, it's different.
Yeah.
You know me with names.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Crawl out of my thimble here.
Oh, dear listener, you just missed out on some comedy gold in the pre-show chat. Perhaps it will come up as we discuss. Wow, what were we just talking about? We were just talking about your real estate there.
Yeah, just the location of my office.
Yeah, it's primo. Yeah,
I'm 7 feet from the refrigerator and 9 feet from the bathroom. Like, what more do you need?
You pretty much just need, like, the next step after that is, like, have you ever seen those, like, it's like a scooter, but it's really just a scooter motor attached to a beer cooler?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, it's got a funny name. I'll never remember it, but it's got a funny name, like, you know, the Beer Go or something. And it's a cooler it's basically a cooler on top of a scooter. So you sit on the cooler and just drive it around. And then when you get thirsty, you just open it up and pull a beer out.
Open it up and pull a beer out. Yeah. Right. I need that. Rig one onto the side of my desk chair.
Yeah. You're one step away.
Yeah.
It's like a lark with beer in the seat. So you're one step away from that. You're two steps away from having two flip up tops, one for the beer, one for the toilet.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, you know,
I suppose I could mount a motor on a toilet and put a cooler on top of that. I don't know.
Yeah, you laugh, but I've seen mock-ups of this. I'm sure someone.
Yeah, I'm sure someone has done it.
Someone's got a patent for that.
Yeah.
The Why Things toilet, like we talked about last week. Ooh, Mexican. Speaking
we've all had a stomach bug this week.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of stomach, stomach exodus.
Yeah,
it's been quite the week.
Cooper got me sick.
Yes. He's been infecting people in Minecraft.
Yeah. Our whole family has had it, and then I think last night it jumped species. Because all my animals are sick, too. Like, Jesus. I feel like I spent the entire day cleaning poop off the floor.
God. I mean, geez. It's like avian flu.
Yeah.
The bubonic diarrhea. Jeez. Well, that explains the thimble comment at the beginning anyway.
Not really.
Yeah, prime real estate. Oh, I didn't go far enough.
You didn't.
No, the prime real estate, right. Park Place. Boardwalk.
Yeah.
Yeah, it all comes around, full circle.
It all comes back around.
Yes, there's a method to the madness.
Yes.
Well, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Number 14.
This is number 14.
That's crazy. Super crazy.
Yeah.
You seem so young for something crazy like that.
Well, I was 22 when we got married, so.
Does that not seem young these days? It seems young. I don't know.
It seems younger now than it did then. Does that make sense?
I'm still processing.
At the time, it didn't seem young. When I was getting married at 22, it didn't seem young. Looking back on it now.
Right.
Like, wow, that was really young.
Wow, 22? I was an idiot. Yeah. I don't know. I have a feeling you guys were way more mature at 22 than I was at 22. But in my defense, when I was 22, it was practically the 80s still. Might have still been the 80s. 22...
Yeah. Early 90s, wouldn't it?
It was like 90. I turned 22 in 1990.
Yeah.
So, I mean, come on. I was still spray painting my cowboy boots. It was pretty bad. Wow. Where are we? What are we doing?
I don't know. You kind of called me before we really decided what we were talking about tonight.
So. I know. I really wanted to get the Monopoly conversation on tape. So here we are. It's Wednesday night late. We're getting ready to do a deploy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a crazy week. It's a short week.
Yes, and I have to be up in 4 hours.
Right, so we're going to get right to it, as you can see. As you can hear.
I may just not go to bed.
Yeah. If I had a flight at 4, which sometimes happens, I would just stay up.
Yeah.
Or 6 even, because you have to be there by 4, so.
Yeah.
So let's not dally too much because we don't want you to be too stressed out.
Don't want to be a zombie at the immigration's office tomorrow.
Yeah, we don't want that. They don't like zombies. Send you back to Minecraft.
Well, I'm the one that already, you know, I can stay here.
Mm.
I'm not the one that needs to get paperwork renewed.
Doesn't it count that I thought you could just marry into citizenship.
No. Like, he could apply for citizenship and it probably get it pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a permanent resident.
And that
has to be renewed every 10 years.
I'm always so confused by all the difference between, like, what's a work visa, what's a green card, what's a resident. So he can or can't vote?
He can't vote.
Cannot vote. Okay. It doesn't matter anyway. Votes don't count. I think that was proven already.
Yeah. It's the residency versus citizenship has only really bitten us one time when he had applied for a job and gone through all the training and the hiring process and everything, and was about to get it and then found out he had to be a U.S. citizenship, had to be a U.S. citizen to finish the
term. Well, I mean, what was it, Secret Service?
It's like NCIC. He was going to do dispatching for the campus police.
Huh. Oh, it actually was kind of.
Yeah.
I thought I was kidding.
Yeah, it was. No, it was a law enforcement thing.
Well, guns do run in your family, I'm told. So.
Do they? Did I tell you that?
You mentioned it last week, but then I didn't pick up on the thread. Like, maybe we should pick that up. I know we're going to try and be quick this week, but you said your dad, you have a story about your dad answering the phone with a gun, which...
Answering the door, yeah.
Right. Well, what did I say? The phone?
Yeah. It's like, who would know or care? Who
doesn't answer the phone with a gun? Don't make me use this. Wow. Yeah, answering the door.
Yeah.
With a gun. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Is there a story there, or was that just like a...
There's a story there. At the risk of offending some people, I could tell it.
All right. Did anybody end up in the hospital?
No, no one ended up in the hospital. Right. And
did anybody end up in the backyard?
No, nobody ended up in the backyard.
Okay.
But the Jehovah's Witnesses finally stopped knocking on the door at 6 o'clock in the morning every Saturday. So.
Wow. Frankly, that's asking for it. It doesn't, like, the denomination is, because we have birds that live in our gutters,
mm-hmm.
and I thought it was the cutest thing, and we have kids, and it's like, look, there's a nest, and there's the little baby birds, and you can actually see the mommy birds, like, feeding the baby birds and stuff, or whatever, the daddy birds, I don't know what it is, but, and it seemed really cute until it got hot out, and we had to leave our windows open.
Then it got really stinky.
That hasn't happened yet. Do you think that's going to happen?
I don't know. It might.
I don't know if that will, but like 30 minutes before the sun comes up, all of a sudden we're in like the monkey house at the zoo. It's like so loud that I want to actually bring my mic upstairs and record
the birds.
Yeah, it wouldn't even sound real. I want to sell it as like a loop on Pond 5 or something. It'd be the most amazing bird loop ever, but
like Alfred Hitchcock movie moment.
Yeah, it's so loud though, and the baby is just like, I'm like, do we roast the baby or let her wake up from the birds? So usually I pick birds.
Yeah.
Anyway, like I said, we should jump right into it because I know you have to. We got things to do, people to meet, places to go.
Yes. Yes. Long drives to make.
Exactly. All right. So the usual process. We've got, I think, no housekeeping.
I don't think so.
By the time you hear this, it will already be. I'll probably post this on Thursday, just in case people are out of their normal routine, because in the U.S. it's a holiday on Friday.
Yes.
I may post a little early this week. Imagine that.
Yeah, it's our annual blow things up day.
That is correct.
Drink beer and light fire to explosives.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, that's the South. It's that way every day, right? Like,
well,
drink beer and blow stuff up.
Our neighbors across the road used to do fireworks, for the month before the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
But they happened in recent years. And I just realized, I apologize if I'm kind of slurring tonight. I bit the side of my tongue really hard earlier. It's all swollen.
Sure you did.
Yeah.
You've been hitting the Mike's Hard Lemonades. I can tell.
No, I gave my last one away earlier.
All right. Well, let's see. That was housekeeping. The Mike's Hard Lemonade was housekeeping. So that's housekeeping. And I have a funny quick bug report.
Okay.
That we talked about last week but didn't get to, so we'll talk about it real quick this week. It's just stupid. It's just classic stupidity. and it is a potential segue into the feature we're going to talk about this week. This week we're going to talk about taking a web app and putting it in a native wrapper 100% unchanged, and talk about the differences, the pros and cons of that sort of envelope, that delivery mechanism, or that container. It's a little more interesting than I expected, so I thought it'd be fun to talk about. Especially
more differences than you expected, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I whittled it down to 10. There were more than that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, unchanged, exact same app.
Wow, are we going to get a countdown style?
Yeah, we should do that. I don't know. That's scared. Now it's
in memory of Casey Kasem.
Right. That's what we'll do. This is the in memoriam episode for Mr. Kasem. So the bug was related to that. So we'll talk I'll talk in detail technically about what was going on there. But I was testing this particular app on Windows Phone. So I was like, all right, I'm going to see how this, I want to make sure this does run everywhere, as is our want.
Mantra.
So to speak, yes, our mantra. And so I'm testing it on Windows Phone, and there's a particular page that has a date field. It's like an HTML5 date input. So input type equals date, that is supposed to fail over gracefully on browsers that don't understand it to be type text.
Right.
And that's the default way that it works. And then I threw some JavaScript in there to make it a little slicker, because date inputs on mobile are actually pretty annoying when you are not frequently entering arbitrary dates. So like if you're frequently entering today's date, they're really annoying because they amount to filling out three fields when all you really want to see is today.
Yeah.
So if you just want to say today, it's a lot easier to just give somebody a select thing that says today, yesterday, and other. So that's what I did. And if somebody picks other in the pop-up, it gives them the actual date picker. You know, it's all like wonderfully progressively enhanced. So if JavaScript doesn't exist, then it doesn't. It just gives them a date field. And if the date field doesn't exist, it just gives them an input, regular text field. Works great. But on Windows Phone, I open this in Windows Phone, and it's like, I charge the thing up because I haven't used it in a little while. I charge the thing up and I go to the page. Everything looks great. I think it's IE 11 actually on the current version of Windows Phone, which I think I have Windows Phone 8, pretty sure. Yeah, it's not 7.5 anymore. So it's like Windows Phone 8 on a Lumia 920. And so everything looks good. All the CSS is looking good. I'm like, wow, this is like totally works. Wow.
Yeah.
Get to that page and pick today, enter the food, and it's like April 7th, 2013.
Oops. Almost everything works.
Yeah, everything looks good CSS-wise, but I'm like, oh man, there must be some date object bug. And like the way I wrote the JavaScript, because the JavaScript is picking today's date.
Yeah.
So there must be, I'm Googling until my Googlers are sore. I'm looking at Stack Overflow. I'm like Windows Phone JavaScript date object bugs, or like, is there Microsoft syntax for the date object? So I'm like, this is like a side project, so I'm not doing it like crazy. So, 15 minutes, I'm looking around trying to figure it out. I don't worry about it. Like, come back to it. I'm thinking about it. Like, what could it be? So finally, I realize that the date on the phone is set wrong. Because it had been... the battery ran out because I hardly ever use it. And so the date had like stopped at like April 13th, 2013 or whatever it was.
It didn't automatically update.
No.
Oh. So
yeah. Can you believe
that? Yeah.
It just like raises a funny issue. Like, what kind of phone doesn't just automatically fix the date?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it didn't even occur to me that the date could be wrong.
I know. That's so... like, you would think it would just automatically update and fix the date.
Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with my code whatsoever. It was
like perfect. Whenever I travel across time zones, my phone just automatically changes.
Yeah. Sometimes it's almost bad.
Yeah.
You're like, I purposely keep my laptop on home time so I have some kind of basis in reality. But yeah, so that was it. And in fact, just to like add insult to injury, I go into the settings and it was set to automatically like check, set the time from a time server.
Oh, it just didn't do it.
It just totally didn't do it. And I know I was connected to the internet because it was a website that I was connected to. So
it is Windows.
There's that. I probably didn't pay for some license or something.
Working date time in Windows cost extra.
Yeah, yeah, it does.
You know, back in the 90s, I had a Windows computer that was always losing time.
Hmm.
And,
it was slow?
Yeah, it was slow.
Well, did you wind it?
It turned out to be my sound card. I know.
In case you thought building computers was easy.
My sound card. There was something about the firmware for my sound card conflicting with the particular type of Intel processor that I had that would cause Windows to lose time. I'm like, Christ. This is ridiculous.
Talk about unintended consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you think of something in the machine that's less related to time than the sound card?
I know. I would never have discovered this on my own. I had called tech support for... like it was an old Acer computer, and I had called Acer tech support for some other unrelated reason. And while the guy was on the phone, I just asked, by the way, do you happen to know why my computer is losing time why it's always slow? He's like, oh, what model do you have? And I told him, he's like, oh yeah, it's your sound card. God. Like, what?
You know what? Like Steve Jobs, when he was like, most people just need a car, and he's like, here's the iPad. He had a really solid point.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, here's technology, people. It can't even keep the time correctly. Like, yeah, sure, there were monks in the 1700s that could do it.
But this computer can't.
This Acer computer hasn't got it figured out yet. So, yeah. While we're bashing Windows.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, I had to use Windows 8 the other day on a laptop.
That's so funny because on the same day we both used Windows 8.
I know, and I just wanted to, like, if it had been my laptop and not someone else's, it would have gone out the window.
Yeah. You got to get, I feel like I had the same reaction, but I was trying to temper it with, like, okay, give it a minute. You know, like, it's a totally new paradigm. I just don't know where anything is. I don't know what the gestures are supposed to be. I was at, like, a BJ's, and Cooper's been using Erica's MacBook Air 13-inch, mm-hmm. like, constantly.
Yeah.
He's, like, barely... there's, like, so many interesting... Like, it's so interesting watching a little kid with today's technology. It's, like, mind-bending. I'll try not to get into it.
And the way they learn stuff.
It's crazy. Erica's like, you know, I hear her saying, like, what did you do? I come around the corner. He somehow figured out how to AirPlay YouTube to our Google TV. She doesn't even know how to do that. He's like, you just go, just write this and that. And he just shows you how to do it. And it's like, it's like this such a cliche where it's like, oh, I don't know how to work my VCR. I got to get my kid to do it for me. But it's really true. They just press everything until it works. And then they immediately remember it.
Yeah.
It's freaking bizarre. And he was like, I was like, yeah, you can do that on the downstairs TV too, because I've got Chromecast in the basement.
Right.
And he was like watching a Minecraft video, he's like, wait a minute. He like picks this particular video mm-hmm. that he really like, I don't know why he picked it. Either he liked it or he really wanted to see it bigger or whatever. And we have like a 50-inch Vizio TV in the basement, so he like puts it up there and he's like, oh, it's so much more colorful. And he's like, I didn't know we could have put videos on the TV. And I'm like, we watch videos on the TV all the time. Like, we watched, you know, How to Train Your Dragon. He's like, that's a movie, that's not a video. So like, to him, videos are something on YouTube, right? Yeah. Like, a video is something you can interact with. You can, like, you can change the play position. You can change the volume. You can stop and do a related one. But a movie, you sit there and just wait for it to finish.
Yeah.
Which I found really interesting. Yeah. It's nuts. It's crazy. But anyway, the point is that I was thinking about buying him his own laptop because he's going to wreck Erica's, you know, because he had a stomach bug too. And he's puking all over the place. I'm like, if he pukes on this Air, it's done.
Yeah. And even if it's not, who's going to clean it up, you know?
It was chunky, too. Yeah. It was like he was like shooting cottage cheese out of his mouth.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's the first time he's been sick like that. He has never been sick like that, so. Anyway, so I was looking around. I'm like, I can probably get a PC for like freaking $300.
Yeah.
And sure enough, we're at BJ's, and they've got like five different ones. But they're all touchscreen. They're like $700, but they're all touchscreen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, that's kind of... I don't know. That's kind of cool. That might be interesting just to have for testing or whatever. And if he closes it like with a pen in the hinge and it smashes the screen, I won't really care. You know? So, but yeah, so point being, long story short, it was like so frustrating. I'm like, how do I launch something? Like, what, how do you, you know, you're just like,
like Windows 7, no problem. I could sit down and use Windows. No, 7.
Was that the one after Vista?
Yeah.
I thought 7 was... No?
No.
What was it? XP, then Vista, then 7?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I can sit down and use Windows 7, no problem.
Yeah, it's no problem. You just launch Chrome and you're done. You just do all your normal stuff in Chrome. Right.
But Windows 8, it's just... Like, I hate that I have to randomly put my mouse cursor at different corners of the screen to get various menus.
I hated it too, but I didn't really give it much time. Like, if I knew where stuff was, it might be slick, and that you can swipe in from the edges sort of makes sense for a tablet. I don't know. I'd like to give it a chance, but I really was getting mad.
Yeah.
It's really
scattered. So you're not going to subject Cooper to that, are you?
No. Well, so here's the thing. I was like, so I'm looking at it. I'm like, well, wait a second. I don't know if it's a Vista machine. I guess it's a Windows 7 machine, a laptop at my house. I got it from Dell. Mm-hmm. It was like $250.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I'll just give him, all he does is play Minecraft. I'll just like put Minecraft on it and he can just use that. No. He just rejected it out of hand. It's a nice big screen too. It's like a 15 or 16 inch screen. It might be, even be a 17 inch. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, no.
No.
Where's mommy's computer?
Yeah. He needs a Mac.
Yeah, he rejected it. And it was purely based on the housing. Like, he didn't even want to open it.
Gotta have that brushed aluminum.
Yeah. What is that? That's not cool. So.
Well, don't you have a MacBook Air there that's like a 64 gig hard drive?
Yeah, that's my main.
Yeah, maybe you need to upgrade and give him that one.
Erica keeps on saying that. She's like, just give him the 11 inch. The battery's shot. But I just don't want to spend. I gotta do it.
Yeah.
I'll just go out and buy I want the 13 inch with a 12 hour battery life.
Mm-hmm.
This time I'm going for it. I'm not. Usually I buy the bottom of the line Mac because they're so much better than everything, and the price difference is pretty significant.
Yeah.
And it's like the upsell is just like, before you know it, you're spending $2,000.
Yeah.
So, and I've done that every single time I bought a laptop, and I've generally been happy, but lately I've just been really chafing with that. It's because of the podcast. Cause like, you need space. And also the virtual machine thing we were talking about the other day, it's like, you really need space.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get one with like a half a terabyte and the, you know, like not maxed out, but like pretty
close,
pretty big, pretty close. Yeah. So maybe spend $1,500 and get like the 13 inch Air, $1,600 maybe. It'll almost be as much as my Google Glass.
Yeah. I have a 13 inch Air, but it's a 2012 Air, I think.
Yeah. That's what Erica's got. It's got the backlit keyboard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've got my 11 inch is from 2010. I bought it in October 2010. Right before I went to Japan, because I wanted a good travel computer, and it doesn't. The main thing I don't like about it is no backlit keyboard, which is a real pain, surprisingly big pain. And then the second thing I don't like is the hard drive's only 64 gig.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, geez. Now that we've bashed Windows.
Yeah, I feel like we started with a point.
We did start with a point, and it was that.
Your date bug was not actually a bug in your code. It was a Windows bug.
Exactly. And the code that was running there was from Kilo, which the dear listener has heard us talk about ad nauseum over the years.
Yes.
Because it is basically my demo app. It's like my live test daily use application that I just I constantly rebuild. I build it for all different platforms. It's like my hello world for every new interesting platform.
It's your version of the to-do list application that gets written in everything.
Exactly. And it basically is a to-do list. It basically is. It's like a very simple,
similar, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very simple database application where you've got like a list. You have lists grouped under some grouping. You know, in the case of a calorie tracker, it's dates under
dates
user
and food.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, on a particular date, you ate these foods, you did these exercises, and they had these calories, and it does a little math for you. So, I mean, really, that's the only difference between from a technical standpoint, just the math part is the only difference between that and a to-do application, I suppose.
Yeah.
Our simple one. So the thing is, the application is, you know, by design supposed to be pretty simple. Like the main design goals for the application are for it to be fast. Number one, has to be wicked fast.
Mm-hmm.
No futzing around, because it's the kind of thing you're doing data entry on all sorts of crap devices on crap connections all throughout the day, and you don't want to remember to do it later. You want to be able to do it live, or like, or at least when you think
and
of
you
it.
Don't want to have to wait, otherwise you're not going to do it.
Yeah, you're going to forget, and then you're memorizing stuff, and then you might as well have a piece of paper. So in order for it to be better, that's why I love this application as a testing ground for mobile, especially because it needs to be really good to beat a piece of paper. Because that's what I used to do. Because I'm like obsessive compulsive about tracking my calories. And I used to keep a little piece of paper in my back pocket. Well, it would be like a 8.5 by 11 piece of paper that I folded down to be like 2 by 3 inches.
Yeah.
And I would write in very tiny letters, write down stuff as I ate it. And then when I filled up that section for the day, I would like, you know, like origami it to a clean square. Yeah. And so like that one piece of paper would last me like 3 weeks. And it would just have all these little teeny little scrawled notes on it. And the only downsides were that you had to have a something to write with.
Yeah. And you had to do the math yourself.
The main thing is that you had to do the math yourself. So you really, it just needs to be, it was really the math. And it needs to be as accessible and as fast as a piece of paper, which is no small challenge. So there's that. So it had to be fast. The next thing is that it just had to be really simple. Like a lot of, because to compete with the piece of paper, like I've downloaded dozens of calorie tracking applications and they're so like a lot of people love them. My dad's a wicked tech jock type of guy. Weirdly, in his retirement, he got really into like personal training and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he tracks all his calories. He wears like all the fitness trackers. He tries all the different ones. He wears like a pulse watch, which tracks his, a Polar, which tracks his pulse and all that stuff. And he tracks all his calories, all that. And he does not like keto. He likes to be like, see, he's retired. So he has like, I swear this has a lot to do with it. He has more time to kind of pour over it. So for him, it's more about the reporting. And with me, it's more about the data entry capture, the data capture.
Right. He wants to be able to analyze.
Yeah. He wants to see graphs. He wants to see graphs, but he needs to put in the data to support those graphs. So like in most of these applications, it does this thing where it says, okay, new food. You press this button, new food. It does this like gratuitous animation to some new screen. And then it says, okay, is this breakfast? Is this a mid-morning snack? Is this lunch? Is this a late afternoon snack?
Is this
supper? Is it dinner? Yeah. Is it a late night snack? So like before you can even put in your food, you have to decide what it is, which is fine if your eating habits fall into those categories, but...
Yeah, but maybe I want yogurt for breakfast, and then maybe I want yogurt, like, after dinner.
Yeah, maybe sometime. I want pancakes for dinner. It's like, it doesn't...
Yeah. Pancakes for dinner is the best time to have pancakes.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I don't even... But I think there must be some kind of, like, Weight Watchers thing that you get... I could speculate. I don't know why anybody wants that piece of information. It's like if you can easily automatically track the time, like as we just pointed out, you can track the date and the time like no problem. So all I really want to know is how many calories I ate.
Yeah. Right. And you don't want it to look up the food for you.
Well, that's another thing. The only thing I really want to know is how many calories I ate. That's all I care about. I don't do anything like, oh, well, I had these foods and they have these kind of vitamins and therefore that's why my mood was bad or whatever. Like, you know, tied into Moodly or something and be like, oh yeah, I kept under my calories, but all I ate was Pringles. So I can't imagine.
So I was a little grumpy.
Right. Exactly. I don't get into that. It's pure math with me. Like if I stick to a certain number of calories, it maintains the weight that I want. It doesn't matter what the food is. I could just drink beer all day. As long as I keep it under a certain number of calories, I'll be fine. As far as I'm concerned.
Crush you and your male metabolism.
I suppose. Well, the number of calories is low. Like it needs like 1700.
Yeah.
Like if I eat 1700 calories a day, I weigh 185. It works like that. So, but it's difficult. Like, I'm not good at keeping to 1,700 calories, but whatever. The point is, I just need to know the number. And the only reason I even put what I ate is so that I can remember whether or not I wrote down everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, if I just saw a list of numbers, I'd be like, did I remember to put down that Snuggly Cake? I can't remember if I wrote down the Snuggly Cake, because I see 200 calories and I know that's how many calories that is, but I also had yogurt and that was 200 calories. So did I write?
Yeah.
So like the only reason I even put in the food is so that I know that I wrote everything down. So this is all to explain the simplicity concept of the app. So like it's refreshingly feature free, as I put it. You go in, you put in your food, it gives you a like type ahead. So as you start typing, it autofills from previous entries and you can pick from the list.
Yeah, that's nice when you added that. I like
that. Yeah, that's a big help. And then you just put in the number of calories and you hit save. That's it. It doesn't do anything else. It's not supposed to.
Yeah.
So those are the first two things, you know, speed, number one, simplicity, number two, and number three is freedom, which is that I want to be able to enter it on a freaking toaster. I want to be able to be able to reach for any piece of paper and write this down, so to speak. So I want it to be as ubiquitous as a piece of paper. I can pick up any phone. I can go on any web browser. I can be on the command line. I could send if I wanted to just compose an API request. I've never done that, but I want to be able
send
to
send it a text message. Can you do that yet?
I haven't set up text messaging or email input. I'll actually talk about that in the context of watches.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a new input format that I think will cover all those bases. But right now, it's currently and initially primarily a web app, a straight up server side templated PHP web app that returns formatted HTML from the server. Nothing fancy. So that it will run on absolutely anything.
Yeah.
Anything that can render HTML, you can use. You can use this on anything that renders HTML. And then I sort of zhuzh up the fanciness for devices that have, that you know, browsers that cut the mustard.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I can use Kilo on my Kindle Paperwhite.
Have you tried it?
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. You should be able to. There's no reason not to, because it works without JavaScript, it works without CSS. And if you weren't in a browser environment, you can use the command line interface. So there's a lot of options. Or you could use the API directly if you really wanted to.
Use links.
Yeah.
Is that even still around?
I should try that. I've literally never used it.
I haven't used it since like the early 90s.
I've never used it. I'm kind of embarrassed to say that, actually.
I don't even know if it's still around.
Oh, it's got to, come on. It's got to be.
Surely.
So I just wish you'd stop calling me Shirley.
Sorry. I'm going to get my inflatable autopilot here and put him in the seat instead.
Roger. So those are the three predicates. Those are the three design predicates, that it needs to be wicked scary fast. It needs to be super duper simple by design. It purposely leaves out tons of features for good reason. And it needs to run on everything from a toaster to a TV, which it does.
Yeah.
That is all just preamble, frankly.
I'm not going to bed tonight.
No, this actually, I don't think this is going to take that long, because we are up to the top 10 list.
Oh, nice.
We are at the top 10 list. So once all that happened and this web app, this responsive, progressively enhanced web app was working, tested on Firefox phone, Android versions, all sorts of versions of Android, Windows phone, blah, 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 all down the list. You run in any browser, it worked in every single browser.
Which is the point.
Yeah, it works. You have access. And I tested on TVs, for crying out loud. So you could use this website with a D-pad. So you could like tab, you could tab to buttons and they highlight so you know where the focus is. Like, it's tested.
Yeah.
So what would happen if I just wrapped this in PhoneGap?
Mm-hmm.
So like, first of all, how would I do that? Because it's a PHP app that lives on the server side, and that's not how you usually do a PhoneGap app. PhoneGap app is really, generally it's meant to be, or it's I suppose most commonly done as
static.
Yeah, it's basically static HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, where the vast majority of the application is the JavaScript.
Yes.
And you're calling for data from a server, and it returns data, and you're modifying the DOM locally. So it's really like a classic front-end single-page web app written in JavaScript. But
which I've done many of.
Yeah, and as have I. But they're brittle. Like, JavaScript's the most brittle piece of that stack.
Yeah.
Where one syntax error and the whole thing poops the bed.
Yeah.
To put it down.
Yeah, like everything just stops.
Yeah, it's just like nothing there. There's no fallback. There's no nothing. So I was like, I didn't really want to go there. But the fact of the matter is, if you are running in a PhoneGap application, you have a much more known environment than you do when the user could be using any user agent. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you can take shortcuts and be like, well, I'm not going to optimize for stuff that's physically impossible to happen. Like, I'm not, like in my Android PhoneGap app, I'm not going to optimize for Firefox OS quirks because you right, can't install this app there.
Or Safari weirdness.
Yeah, right. But I wasn't coming at it from that angle. So that's the reverse mode. That's the what's the least I have to do for this platform I'm thinking about. Mm-hmm. What I want to do, like my goal was to have like literally one code base and not and do the barest possible minimum to get it also working on the watch, also working on Android, iOS, Windows Phone. Those are the three. So what I did was, I went up to PhoneGap build, so I didn't want to install anything on my teeny weeny 64 gigabyte hard drive. I certainly didn't want to install Xcode and the Android SDK and Eclipse or Android Studio, whatever they're calling.
I don't think you have a big enough hard drive for that.
No, it wouldn't fit. I'd have to install Xcode and then delete it and then install. Yeah. So, I didn't want to do that. I just wanted to use PhoneGap build.
Yeah.
So I stuck everything in GitHub. And of course, I mean, it was already in GitHub. And I just go to build.phonegap.com and log in. And I point at the GitHub repo. And in the GitHub repo, I added a file that you don't normally need in a web app, which is called config.xml.
Ah.
And that allows you to set some configuration options. I'm going to guess that mine has about between 30 and 50 lines of XML in it.
Yeah, and that's the PhoneGap configuration stuff.
Yeah, it's stuff like the version number of the app and
the vendor and
right, like
yeah,
my
I remember
name.
Doing all that.
Yeah, there are a couple of things that are app related, that will I'm actually going to get to in the top 10 list, but things like hiding the status bar on iOS and stuff like that. But not too many. There's maybe like 6 lines of that. So I said, all right, I don't want to. But to convert this whole thing to a client-side application from a server-side application means I probably have to do something funny, like maybe make a JavaScript file that does AJAX requests for everything. Maybe I could use jQuery Mobile and kind of fake the whole thing. Yeah, so this is what I did. So the thing is, when you use build, you have to have a file called index.html. Because that is like the thing it opens when the app launches. So I made an HTML page that redirects to http://getkilo.com. Done.
I was wondering if it was a redirect or if it was a big full screen iframe.
Nope, not an iframe. It's literally a meta refresh. So you open up the page. And is like an instantaneous meta refresh to go to
Get Kilo.
Right. And then after that, I added in some logic that checks to make sure that you're online. And if you're not online, it actually displays that index page and set you like that index page basically is the offline page. And it says, oh, you don't have an internet connection. Like, we can't reach Kilo right now. Like, maybe you should check your internet connection and try again. And there's a try again button, which just refreshes the page. It's like no freaking work.
Yeah. Like, there's not even any JavaScript on that button. It's just a link to itself.
Right. So I mean, it's like super, super brain dead easy. And the fact of the matter is your phone's not offline. It's almost always online. And if I really wanted to go nuts, and I'm going to do this, I will add JavaScript to that page to let you enter stuff on that page. But like, you can't do the, if you're offline, you can't do the autofill and the type ahead. And there's like so many things you can't do, but I don't want to just leave you high and dry if you're offline, because it does rarely happen.
Yeah.
So, okay. So then I was like, all right, now I've got this, and it totally works. Like I put in that one index page that just redirects to the website, and it stays inside of the PhoneGap container. So like all of the links that you
click. That's nice.
Yeah, it's awesome. It used to be that it didn't do that. Like there was optional and you had to, it didn't default to that, but now it does.
Nice.
So essentially it's a single site browser. And
whether that will get through the App Store is another question, but
yeah, absolutely. It probably won't get through the Apple App Store. There is like Android, it will for sure, because they don't check for that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you can distribute apps via Android anyway, like however you want. But the other thing is, I actually think that Apple will approve it, to tell you the truth, because the I've done this in the past, and the rejection that I've gotten was because I didn't handle offline gracefully. Mm-hmm. And this does handle offline gracefully. So I'm going to submit it and see what happens. But the fact of the matter is you can install it on your own phone and use it to your heart's content if you want.
Yeah.
So once I did that, there were a shocking number of, I mean, but bottom line is I never use it in the web on my phones anymore, which is a huge change.
Mm, yeah, that is.
I never use it in the browser anymore, even though it's literally the same code base.
Not even as a home screen application where you don't get the browser Chrome and all that?
Nope. No, especially not that. I hate those. Hmm. And I'll tell you why. So I've been compiling a list of stuff that's awesome about running a website inside of PhoneGap, basically.
Okay.
On iOS and Android. And I should probably get to it. number one.
No, you go backwards.
Should I?
I don't know. Yeah. Well, no, not if they're not in order by awesomeness.
No, they are. Well, they're in order from the least awesome. Yeah. So we'll start number two. We'll count down to the best one.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be kind of disappointing when I get there. There's not a huge difference, but anyway, we'll do it in reverse. That's more. Number 10, you get a more reliable sleep resume type of thing.
Ah, yes. Yes. This is a very good point that came up on an app I was working on before I started doing sticky all the time.
So what was your situation?
Just the whole sleep resume thing with anything browser based sucks.
Right. Cause the browser will
refresh.
It makes decisions.
Yeah.
And at least in the case of my application, they were always the bad decision.
Yeah.
Whether it logs you out or it does something you don't want it to do, just something unexpected. It might resume. Yeah,
in my case, it was always refreshing.
Yeah. And especially with a single page, like if it's a JavaScript based thing, if you don't painstakingly maintain your state, it always goes back to like the default state.
Yeah.
Which is really irritating for some situations. Mine's not like that because mine was on a real URL. So like Kilo, it's not going to surprise you by going to a different page. Mm-hmm. But there is this weird startup thing where the browser's doing something like, so if you have, I'll save the icon to the home screen. Well, this is not number 10. This is a different number. I almost jumped ahead. But in this one, if you relaunch the app from the icon on the home screen, it's like way faster. It's like, boom. There's no, whatever the browser does, because it does some stuff, mm-hmm. it doesn't do any of that inside of PhoneGap.
Yeah.
So like wherever you were, bang, you're back there. And the only difference in the case of this particular application I put in on purpose which is that every single page has a meta refresh set to 120 seconds. So if you sit there for too long, it goes back to the dashboard mm-hmm. because you probably have made data entry in another on another thing. So you want to, so like you can, you don't want to see stale data. Like it happened to me right. repeatedly that I was seeing stale data when I was switching between devices, which is jarring. And I found that around 2 minutes, like you don't sit on a new food screen for 2 minutes on purpose.
No, you don't.
It should take you under 3 seconds. So if 2 minutes later happens, then it automatically goes back to the screen. And cool, like very cool, it seems to happen behind the scenes. So when I relaunch from the home screen, the PhoneGap application is already like back where it needs to be. Like the new data is already nice. There. Yeah, it's almost like it will run that refresh in the background even when the app's not in the foreground. So that is much nicer. It's I guess it's a subtle thing, but it is really nice.
Yeah, that is a lot nicer.
Mm. Number 9. Although I didn't do this, you can enforce a particular orientation with PhoneGap.
Ah, that would be very handy for some applications.
Big time. Yep. So it you know, it's in some cases it's just lazy where you just want to design a portrait layout and you don't mm-hmm. want to also design a landscape. I didn't do that. Kilo works. It takes advantage of whatever screen space it has. It shows bigger tables, it has responsive tables. It shows bigger tables in landscape and has, you know, moves the buttons around appropriately, but you can enforce orientation if you want, which is not feasible in a browser.
Yeah. That's kind of huge for some things. Mm-hmm. For some applications, that's a really big deal.
Right. And there's something, you know, there are things like push notifications that I didn't put in this list because that does require coding.
Yeah.
The enforcement orientation thing is like literally one line config in the config document.
In the XML.
Yeah. So I chose to put it in. It's like so freaking easy to put in. So yeah, you can enforce the orientation if you need to. Number eight. This one is kind of a big one, which is that the user can't inadvertently clear the local data.
Mm, yeah.
So basically in order to even clear your session cookie that you keeps you logged in, you would need to delete the app from your home screen. You basically have to uninstall the application to clear the local data.
Yeah.
In a web browser, there you could be in wherever. You could be on some random site and be like, I think that I shouldn't have gone there. Maybe they're trying whatever. You go and you clear your browser cache. And because of that one site, you're now logged out of everything, including Kilo.
Yeah.
Which is wicked annoying the next time you launch Kilo and you have to log in when all you want to do is put in, 400 calories of bagel.
Right.
So
I was going to say oatmeal cookie. But.
Yeah. Yeah. My latest mm-hmm. is the petite vanilla scones from Starbucks. Oh my God, they're so good. Wow. 120 calories.
Yeah. The thing Erica made the other night looked really good.
Please. I should be 700 pounds. I don't know why. She's an amazing cook.
Yeah.
I think it's because she cooks so much amazing stuff so frequently that I don't have that fight or flight. Like I must eat this all, you know, cause I know tomorrow there's going to be just some other new awesome thing. Like what did she make tonight? She made like something crazy tonight. Oh, last night she made like watermelon margaritas and, yeah. What was the other thing? Oh, I brought home custom cupcakes. Anyway, different story.
I'm totally doing margaritas tomorrow after immigrations.
That's a good combination.
Yeah.
So number 8 is the users can't inadvertently clear local data and what does that mean? That means that they never have to relog in. Like even though I have the website set to have like absurdly long timeouts on the cookie, it like essentially doesn't expire for like 20 years or something. You still end up clearing it for some like God unknown reason, or you accidentally,
or there'll be some kind of glitch, or
you open it in a browser for like a different, like I normally I'm in Chrome on my phones, but like maybe I have Safari open and I go to that bookmark and I'm like, wait a second, how come I'm not logged in? Because you're in a different browser, and you just end up logging in more frequently if it's not a phone.
And if you have, it doesn't apply to Kilo, but if you have an application where you're storing more data locally, then not being able to accidentally delete it is huge.
Yeah, very big deal.
Because I had written an app a while back that I was using on my phone to track XP when we were playing D&D. Because I'm a nerd like that. And, I mean, you know, I quit using it because I would accidentally clear my local storage data. And it's like, wait, I just lost 5,000 XP.
Yeah,
I'm never going to level up if I don't fix this.
I know, it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
And it's so the problem is that when you go to clear your cache for some reason, it's never like there's so many unintended consequences. Like you're not thinking there should be something persistent there somewhere. So you know, you don't even know, like speaking for myself, like if I go to clear cache on something, there's absolutely no way I'm going to just magically know what other stuff might be stored in that particular browser on that particular device.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
No, it's a black box of like, I mean, you can check, but it's, I don't know, it's weird. It's nice to have the options like local storage, but there's some, like in practice, there's some major downsides.
Yeah. Like if I want to clear something from cache or local storage or something like that, I'm going to use developer tools and go in and do them one at a time.
Yeah, but you can't do that on a phone.
You can't do that on a phone. And most people aren't going to do that anyway. They're just going to go click the clear cache button and everything's going to be gone.
That's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can plug it into the, you know, some browsers you can plug into the desktop and then like access it remotely. And
yeah, nobody's going to do that.
No, you're just like, you have a problem. So you clear cache because the browser's screwing something up.
Yeah.
Some other site screwed up. And now you're like, wait a second, that cleared everything. Yeah.
I just lost all my XP. Yeah.
Yeah. And in fact, when I do add offline storage, it will be probably in local storage, perhaps in the file API, but probably local storage. And that will be protected. I'll be in a sandbox instead of lumped into the same sandbox with every other website.
Yeah, that's super nice.
Yeah, it is
a really sandbox nice. That you can't accidentally empty.
Mm-hmm. So number 7 is you can launch the application with your voice when it is actually installed on the device.
Okay, Google.
You can either hold down the Siri button and say, Siri, launch Kilo, or you can say, okay, Google, launch Kilo, and it will launch, which is sort of minor, but I'm working on, at least on Android, you can add intent filters to the application. So what I want to be able to do, I'm not positive I can do this.
Tell the app to add stuff.
Yeah, I want to create a custom intent called log calories. And then say, you just say, okay, Google, now, or just a custom intent called log, and then say log 40 calories of whatever, potato chips.
It's like one chip, man.
Or, yeah, I don't know, whatever. You'd think I'd be better at like knowing calories of stuff. Or say log 120 calories burned of biking or something. And so it'll either create an exercise or it'll create a food. And it can actually send voice commands into a web app.
Nice. That'll be nice.
Yeah.
Side note, my OK Google doesn't work.
On the Moto X?
On the Moto X.
Why would that be?
I don't know. Like I've gone in and retrain it. And then it'll work maybe twice, and then it'll just stop working.
Oh, right. Moto X has OK Google from locked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't been using the Moto X. I've been using the Nexus 5, which doesn't have that feature. So I don't know what it would be. Maybe your microphone's screwed up.
Yeah, I've debated sending the phone back.
Hmm.
Because I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Well, I don't know if it's the microphone because the voice translate works well.
Does it?
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't know. Well, there was, did you just get that recent 4.4.4 update?
No, I've got it on my Nexus 7, but I haven't yet got it on my Moto X.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would try that first, but...
Yeah.
Huh. I'll fire up my Moto X and see if it's dorking around with 4.4.4. Also, side note, we were talking about trusted devices a week or two ago, and I forgot that's a Moto X feature. That's not an Android feature.
Ah.
But at Google I.O., they announced that it's going to be an Android feature. So that is coming out with the release of Android L, which I think is going to be called Lollipop.
Nice.
Yes. Excited for that. I love that. Number six.
Think about that one.
Yeah. Your application is available in the App Switcher. So this is especially cool on iOS because... what my typical workflow with Kilo, the web app, Kilo for web, as I call it, was that I would install it to the home screen, air quotes, but I wouldn't make a standalone app out of it because I just find those to be annoying. They don't, I think it's annoying for a different reason that I don't need to go into, but that. It installs the icon to the home screen. So when you press on it, it's basically just a bookmark that would launch in Safari because you can't tell it which browser to launch in, even though I want it to launch in Chrome because that's my browser of choice.
Right.
iOS forces all bookmarks to open in Safari. It would open in Safari, and every time I hit that thing, it'd open a new tab, even if I had a Kilo tab open.
Yeah, that's really annoying.
So annoying.
Yeah.
And I suppose you could argue that it should do that. Because if I didn't want it to do that, I could make it a standalone home screen app. But
still, you could make a good argument that it shouldn't, too.
Yeah, I don't know. Certainly, if it's the exact same URL that's already open, it should probably just pull that one to the front, at least.
Yeah.
Anyway, but... So you end up with like 14, you know, I probably am going to guess my average is like 20 entries per day at least. So yeah. There's like a million tabs open of Kilo. It's like really annoying. And then you close them and then now I'm logged out or whatever. So, so it's just super nice to be able to double click on the home button on iOS and slide your cards over and then boom, there's my donut icon and I can just like pull it right up.
Right. It's such a lovely icon.
I'm like tempted to go all like iOS 7 flat design with it, but I freaking love that donut.
Yeah. Yeah, that donut's amazing.
Yeah, I just want to lick it. So
lick here to log your calories.
Wow. That's I'm not gonna say it. Anyway, so the on Android, KitKat at least, same deal. You've got the recent button on the Nexus 7. It's the far right button.
Yes.
And that shows you all of the recent applications that you've launched. And when you have a PhoneGap application, of course, it shows up in there with the donut icon again, just like a regular application, because that's what it is. And you can jump right to it. Interestingly, at Google I.O., they announced that in Android L, they are going to treat Chrome tabs as open running applications.
Interesting.
Very interesting, yes. They are doing their best to blur the lines between web and native applications.
Yeah.
So when you hit the recent button on Android 5, I guess it is, you're going to see very similar interface to the you know when you on iOS when you hit the you're in Safari and you hit the tabs button like show me all the open tabs and it's like a deck of cards.
Yeah.
Kind of like you're kind of viewing it from above.
Yep.
Looks like that. And it contains individual, not Chrome the browser with a bunch of tabs. It's like individual tabs for each open, individual cards for each open tab in Chrome, as well as individual applications. So
that'll be kind of nice because I end up inadvertently opening, like I went through the other day and closed probably 20 Chrome tabs. And I didn't realize I had that many open.
Yeah.
At least now I'll be able to keep track of it.
Yeah. I love this feature. I think that it's going to be huge from a mental standpoint for the normal user. They're just going to less and less people are going to make a distinction between what's native and what's web. It's just not going to matter.
Yeah.
So, pro tip, when you're in Chrome on Android, there's the URL bar at the top and there is a tabs button and then there's the menu button.
Mm-hmm.
And if you tap and drag down on either one of those buttons, it is a much better experience than tapping them alone.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah, you'll dig it. It's
doing it now.
Yeah. I assume it works on the Moto X. If you drag down, it immediately shows you all your cards and you can swipe them away. It's like a much more... I find myself trying to do it on iOS all the time and like it drives me crazy that it doesn't work.
Oh, that's nice.
It is. Once you get used to it, you don't want to go back.
That's awesome.
It works when the tabs are open too, so you can like swipe down and then swipe down to close all tabs. It's pretty cool. Number five... you get a splash screen, so you can define a splash screen. It's more prominent, I think it's more common on iOS than it is on Android. I don't really care about it on Android for some reason.
Yeah, the startup screens.
Yeah, but you can specify a startup image for iOS so that when your app very first launches, not from when it's waking from sleep or whatever, when you're going back to it, but you can put either a branded or just I just have a blue screen that comes up that shows you that the app is launching. It gives you a little bit of feedback, and then but a lot of people are like super focused on like that splash screen.
Yeah, a lot of like, go all out with it.
Yep. Yeah,
I guess I want to make a good first impression.
Yeah, I mean, I think Twitter's native apps are the prototypical best case scenario for the splash screen, splash or startup image is what it's called on iOS.
It shows the UI. It's just empty, right?
Yeah, it shows a skeleton of the UI. So you're like, okay, I launched the right app. I can see that this is going to be Twitter. And obviously, the application is going to get some data to populate this this UI. Yeah,
and it looks like it just fills in the UI.
Yep.
But really, it's just switching from that static image to the actual interface.
Right, right, exactly.
That's clever, though.
That's really, yeah, yes. And you see a lot of different stuff, and I think the worst example a lot of games will do like stuff like Candy Crush or like what was that not Candy Crush what was the one before that that was so popular like cut not cut the rope Words with Friends and like that whole batch of casual gaming apps. The splash screen would be like an ad for another app.
Yeah.
That they also created. And it always gives you the feeling that you're like sitting through an ad that's even though like I'm a developer and I know that they can't control the amount of time that screen is there. But
it does. It feels like you're sitting through their ad first. Like they're making you sit through that ad.
Yeah. It feels like they're making like they could have skipped that.
Yeah.
Even though they're just trying to take advantage of, like, they're trying to put some... Like
the time that you have to look at the startup screen.
Right. They're like, hey, you got to look at something. Might as well look at an ad for something else. But to me, right. I'm like, oh, I can't believe you made me sit through a pre-roll for your app.
Right. Even though that's not really what it is. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, that's how it feels, right? It's like purely psychological, but Twitter nailed it. Number four. I feel like my Casey Kasem was better when he's alive.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just thinking it was better tonight.
Really? I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe the dear listener can
maybe you're channeling him or something.
Perhaps. You can hide, number five is, the, or sorry, four.
Four.
Is that you can hide the status bar on iOS. So the status bar is that little sliver of 20 pixels at the top that has your battery life and your bars for AT&T or whoever your carrier is. And you can just say, you know what? I want that out. Get that out.
Yes.
Which
for some reason, it really annoys me when it's there.
I think it depends on the app for me. Some apps, like some apps that I spend a lot of time in, I want to know what time it is at the top of the screen.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but some apps, especially photo applications, you want that thing gone.
Yeah.
you know, if you want, it's the opposite of immersive because it's always telling you what time it is. And like, it's right. telling you.
It's very jarring.
Yes. So in the case of Kilo, I took it out just because it was easier, because when it's there, you have to deal with it somehow in the CSS, mm-hmm. which is really tricky.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have to be like, do I add the 20 pixels or don't I?
Yeah.
Am I in iOS or not? And I was just like, screw you, iOS. Just get rid of the status bar.
Just hide it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're not in the app. You like, Kilo, you open and close, open, close, open, close. You're always porpoising in and out of it. You're yeah, not like you're not gonna, hanging you're not out in there.
Waste time and lose track of time inside Kilo.
Yeah. That would be pretty creepy if you made that into your calorie tracking. Oh, yeah.
What did I eat 3 months ago? The
blueberry pie was so good.
Blueberry pie was so good. I'm going to enter the calories one berry at a time. Just to savor it.
2 calories. 2 blueberries, 2 calories. I'm just going to savor this data entry. Wow. That's a new concept. Data entry so good, you can taste it.
Almost taste that donut.
Number 3 is very tightly related to, or very similar to being able to hide the status bar on iOS.
Mm-hmm.
But just in general, you have a lot more screen real estate. Like the design of the web application almost looked wonky when you took away the URL bar and the footer out of the browser, and you had all this like extra. It was almost like a fifth more screen.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, everything looks like all like unbalanced toward the top now because I've got so much more real estate. So it's nice, especially for applications that do have to display a lot of stuff. You get way more room. It's significant.
Mm-hmm.
It's a surprising amount of Chrome. Even within iOS, you can now set a meta tag in your website to the viewport. You can specify an additional bit of content that in the meta. I don't know what the terminology is. Like a meta, you have a meta tag and it has like a name and it has content.
Yeah.
And in the viewport, you can say width equals device width and zoom equals 1 and user zoomable 0, and then you can put comma minimal dash UI at the end.
Hmm.
And as of Safari 7, what that does is it hides the toolbar at the in the footer completely. Like, so the page loads, there's no toolbar in the footer, and the URL bar is drastically minimized.
That's nice, because I know when 7 first came out, people were complaining about how much the browser Chrome was always visible.
Right. Well, that was in landscape mode. They really screwed up landscape. But they did end up fixing it. So what happens is what that means is that, your site needs to have like a reasonable amount of navigation in it, because there's mm-hmm. no obvious way to go. There's no back button. There's no forward button. There's no bookmarking. There's none of that stuff. It's all hidden.
Yeah. It's great for a single page app.
Yeah. It's killer. It's really, really nice. It's a really nice feature. I would love it if I can see Android's going in a slightly different direction. That's also kind of cool, but we'll see how it goes. But it is a nice little thing to throw in there. It's iOS only, of course, but it creates a really nice, clean Safari experience. But obviously, a PhoneGap app is even more so. You got no Chrome at all, and you have to do all the navigation yourself. So that's number 3. That was number 3.
Number 3.
Number 2, we accidentally talked about this a little bit already when we were talking about the opening all the windows in the I don't know why we talked about this already, but we did, which is that it doesn't open a new tab every time. It doesn't open in a new window. That was actually, I put it right near the top because I really, really hated that.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you could do about it. Unless every time you finished doing your data entry, you closed the window in the browser, which I suppose would have been the solution. It just doesn't, it, nothing.
Yeah, no, who does that? Like, no one closes. One closes tabs in their mobile browsers.
Yeah, I mean.
Because you don't see a row of tabs at the top of the screen, so you don't think about it.
Yeah, it wouldn't. There's no way. I'm thinking quickly if even programmatically, if if like if the Kilo application was just this like placeholder page, and like when you hit new food, it created a new window, and when you hit done, like a pop-up window basically, and when you hit done, it closed it, you know, and you always just had that one window. But still, when you launched it from the home screen, it'd still create a new
page. With a bunch of
so number two doesn't open a new window every time, and that's actually heavily related to the more reliable sleep resume and and the app switcher and all that. It's a big I think for me it's a subtle change, but I use it so much that it adds up to a big change, all these things. And I think for a normal user, it just would feel, it's just going to feel more normal. Like it takes away, like something about an so this particular application, since you open it up so many times during the day and you're in it for such a short period, that
you'd see that tab opening all the time.
Yeah, it feels there's like a friction, there's a drag.
Yeah, it feels like it slows things down.
Yeah, it's like there's cruft. I'm like accumulating garbage.
Yeah,
and it doesn't feel right. So I mean, really, the bottom line is I never use it in the web and on the phone anymore. I always use it as the app. It's all these things added up make it significantly better.
And yet you still can use it as a web on the web everywhere.
Right. So like I added a manifest in there for Firefox OS, so you can install it as a Firefox app, but Windows Phone, well, no, Windows Phone has got a PhoneGap app as well. Jesus, what's left? I mean, Kindle Fire, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm like looking around like what would I even open it on that's not iOS or BlackBerry. Android? Yeah, I don't even. Yeah, I mean, BlackBerry. I actually know the BlackBerry experience will work great, because it's funny, the BlackBerry Bold, which is an older BlackBerry that I use for testing, is almost identical to the Google TV browser experience, because they both have a D-pad, and they're both like an 800 by 600 display, even though they're, it's crazy.
Even though one's like 50 inches and the other's
three,
two and a half.
Yeah, two and a half. I can't even, like, I'm looking around, like, I've got some old, I got Windows Phone. What else is out there? I can't even remember. That's it. Ubuntu phone. Like obviously anything with a web browser, you just use it in the web browser.
Paperwhite.
Yeah, Kindle. So that brings us to number one in our top 10 countdown of the pros and cons of a web app and a native wrapper.
Now he's rolling in his grave.
That's right. Do you think he's...
Now that you've killed him.
Do you think he was cremated? I wonder if they scattered him.
I don't know.
Huh. I wonder if people even know what we're talking about.
No. No.
So number one, and let's leave it like that.
Yeah.
Just leave it. You have to listen to last week's episode. This is a no-brainer. That's why it's number one. It's probably the biggest one for a lot of people, although I don't particularly care about it.
Sorry.
Coughing up your phone.
Yeah. Swallow my flashlight.
You're going to puke up a iPod Nano, are you?
Yeah, I might.
So number one is familiar app distribution model.
There you go.
There you go. You can put these in app stores and potentially, drum roll please, charge for them. Even though that's probably stupid.
Yeah.
No one seems to really do that anymore. But
I've noticed that there's a lot more free apps than there used to be.
Oh yeah, that's the. I mean, whenever you see like a trend line, it's all in app purchases. Like nobody, if your app costs money and there's any competitor, you're not getting installs.
Yeah.
So I've actually thought about if it wasn't such a pain in the butt to put stuff in app stores, because it is a pain. I've almost thought about you can use this on the web if you want, or you can have it for free here. But if you want to just donate, it's almost like a PayPal donate button.
Yeah.
If you want to buy, like we could just do a almost like a niche app
For listening to the podcast.
For listening to the podcast. That was just literally the website, and be like, if you want to donate to the podcast, go buy the app and don't even use it.
Yeah.
Unless you want to. But yeah, basically, you could use it as a donations thing. It's just a very, there's a credit card attached to it. So it's a very familiar model.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people who, and there's a certain validation there. Like, I mean, I get the question often, like people are like, oh, you're like, what apps do you have in the App Store?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not really, it's not really where it's at for me.
Yeah. And I tell people I do app development, like, oh, what apps do you have in the App Store?
Yeah.
Like, none. And then they think, oh, like they don't take you seriously.
Right. So this is, so that is definitely cool. But you can also, I mean, I've got this application running on all my iOS devices. You can, if you're just doing it for yourself, or certainly for demo and testing and all that stuff, you don't have to go through all that BS, and you can at least get your feet wet with this stuff without installing a thing. By just, well, I guess you have to generate like all your certificates and all that BS, which requires, it doesn't require Xcode, but you do have to have a Mac.
You have to have an Apple developer, $99, whatever it is.
Yeah, you do. Well, there is a way outside of the Apple ecosystem that, because it just uses OpenSSL or something like that underneath. And there is a way to get around the whole thing. But I think it's against the terms of use, but I've been told that you can do it and it does work, where you can sign your own apps and actually install them on your own device.
Ah.
Kind of self-signed certificate type of thing. I don't know. It's like, I hate to say to people, just spend the $99. I mean, if you really want to play with PhoneGap, and I suggest that you do, web developers in the audience, because as I pointed out at length at the beginning, I literally wrote like a little bit of XML and that's it, and uploaded some stuff, or I basically pointed PhoneGap build at a GitHub repo, and it's free. Like you can do one for free. If it's public, you can do as many as you want for free, and it's just like, boom, app done, installed. And you get this list of 10 bonuses that taken together, I really have to admit that, you know, the OS of both Android and iOS especially are really optimized for an application, native applications over a browser tab, at least right now.
They are. Android's getting better about it, but they are, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's free, for crying out loud. Just create I'll post a repo somewhere at some point of like the index page that just literally, like, you just take the index page that I have and you just point it at your website. It's just like meta refresh my website, and like, boom, you have an app. So, you know, you still have
doesn't
to do
get much easier.
No, it's like trivial. And like I've spent way more time dorking around with the spacing between buttons or something like that than I did to, like, you know, create the Android and iOS apps. And there's some like wacky stuff, like trying to figure out the best way to deal with offline, you know, and I meant to mention this in housekeeping. I mentioned on a previous podcast that the dudes at Financial Times have this sort of iframe
app,
app cache manifest trick,
and
I tested it and it does work, and I am going to use that for the offline support for this, so that when I do submit it to Apple, they can be like, oh, no matter what page I was on when I left the application, when I come back, if I'm now offline, it just gives me this nice offline page. And then I can do whatever I want on that offline page with JavaScript if I want. Or I can just say, get back online.
Yeah. Nice.
But just quickly, in a nutshell, the app cache trick is that you have a... We were saying last week that if you have a dynamic page, you don't want it cached. But if you include a manifest on the page, it's cached implicitly.
It's going to be cached anyway.
Yeah, so you're screwed. But what you can do to get around that implicit caching of that main page is you've got a website, none of the pages have app cache on it, but you don't want them cached. You just want to be able to present a fallback page if they're offline. So you create a manifest that just has, it says cash manifest. And then in the fallback section, you say slash, which is basically a regular expression for your entire website.
Yeah.
Like any URL on your domain, space. And then you put in the fallback, which will be like slash offline.html or whatever you name the page. And then you put a network section is network colon new line. And then you put asterisk.
Yeah.
And what that is telling, well, and then you don't include that in any page except for the offline page. So in that offline.html, you say HTML, in the HTML tag, you say manifest equals, then you point at that manifest that just has like three lines in it or five lines. And then you include that offline page in an iframe in all your other pages.
Yeah, and you can like make it an iframe that you can't see.
Yep.
Make it tiny, make it invisible, whatever you want.
Yep.
Put it outside the canvas, whatever.
Yep. And I got a really nice example of one that is like area friendly, like WCAG accessibility friendly, where it's like, you know, height, width, zero, display none, and alt. I think it's alt empty. You say the word empty, so that if a screen reader hits it, it just says empty.
Yeah.
And you point it at offline, and what it does is it includes the manifest for, even though it's not in the parent page, technically it is, but like the parent page doesn't have a manifest, but it still creates an application manifest for the parent page, but it doesn't implicitly include the parent page. That's the trick.
That's a nice trick.
It's so sweet. And so then what you can do, and then what I did do, is that, well, if I can just arbitrarily include stuff in here, I'm also going to put in my CSS and JavaScript files because those never change, barely ever. So that you can include stuff that the offline page doesn't need. You can put whatever you want in the manifest. You can put stuff on other domains in the manifest. So you can include jQuery, you can include all this other stuff, and that'll all be available offline. And even when you're online, pages,
you don't have to download it again.
It's like permanently cached. You can't get rid of it.
Yeah.
So
even if you're not using it offline, you can still put it in there, and that way it's downloaded and cached, so you get a faster experience when you are online.
Yeah, and you know, there is a limit to the size of the app caches, but potentially you could put fonts in there, and anything static that you're just not going to change that often.
Yeah.
So, but if nothing else, you can do the little trick I just said, and at least when somebody does go to your site and they have no internet connection, they'll get the offline page and they'll say, hey, sorry, you're offline. Come back later.
Yeah.
So very cool.
That's nice.
Holy mackerel. So that was a marathon.
Yeah.
I apologize. You have to get up in 2 hours.
Do I really? What time is it?
It's like 1:16.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I have to get up.
So I felt bad, though. We were supposed to do this last week. And also last week, we just talked forever about non-technical stuff. So... We talked about my butt for like 10 minutes. Which is a lot longer than I usually talk about my butt. But I figured, hey, if we're recording.
Any color change, by the way, or have you given up on that?
I gave up on that.
Okay.
Yeah. I was just wasting the stuff, basically. Oh, God. All right, well, I will let you go, and we will let the dear listener go.
Yeah, because we still have to deploy.
Oh, geez, that's right. Oh, yeah, we're up late to do work.
Yeah.
So that's our show for this week. I'm Jonathan Stark.
And I'm Kelly Shaver.
And we hope you join us again next week for the Niche Podcast. Bye.
Bye.